Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening from a cool, crisp Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This is Dr. John Stamey. It is so good to be here with everybody for Scarycast. We've got a very special episode tonight. We got some great co-hosts, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I will remind everybody that 2 weeks from tonight, which will be December the 6th, we will have John LeMay from Roswell, New Mexico, and he will be talking about his two award-winning books, Tall Tales and Half-Truths of Pat Garrett and Tall Tales and Half-Truths of Billy the Kid. So it's going to be a blast 2 weeks from tonight. We'll have, of course, another show next week on the 30th, and so we're going to have a lot of fun here on Scarycast. First of all, I would like to introduce Rob Kellum. How are you doing tonight? One of our standard co-hosts, and we're always glad to have you with us, Rob.
Yeah, well, Papa Stroh's doing great. How are you?
We love Papa Stroh. I'm sorry, I'm just attached to Papa Stroh. I was trying, but Papa Stroh is here, and he's the best in the world, so thanks for being with us. How are you up there in cool North Carolina? North Carolina's kind of cool tonight, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's the season, this time of year, and getting right for the big Thanksgiving week. Really excited. And
that's right.
I hope
and
everyone
a big
has a great Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and you've got a big show coming up this Thursday night, don't you?
Yes, Thanksgiving special on WCW Retro, which will be on VOCNation.com this Thursday night at 9. So it should be great.
That's great. And we'll find out more about that when we do our wrap-up tonight. Great to have you here. And, of course, from Charleston, the one and only, the amazing Velvet. How are you doing tonight, Velvet?
I am great. How's everybody?
Doing great.
Hey, Velvet.
That was a great Tony the Tiger impersonation, by the way. That was better than Lee Marshall.
You're funny. Ay, ay, ay.
Great. Oh, if everybody just knew the personalities, this is the most action-packed group of people on the internet, I'll tell you that. So I'm glad to have you two guys here. Devin
yeah,
has a hall
I'm
pass
tonight.
Yeah,
makes me want to get some Kellogg's cornflakes now. Tony
yeah,
Tiger,
right?
Man.
All right.
Oh,
great. So anyway, Devin and Robin have a hall pass tonight. They've had things come up. We're so glad
to
have...
I love that movie, Hall Pass. Yeah.
Oh, I know. It's absolutely something. Tonight, we are missing a wonderful co-host because he is our guest tonight. Tony Filosi from the murder capital of the universe, Harlan, Kentucky. Tony, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing absolutely wonderful. I'm super glad to be here with everybody, and we have an amazing piece of evidence, or actually amazing couple of pieces of new evidence that came to light about the Manzo Shepherd murder story that we want to share.
Mm. Well, that's great.
Nice.
Tony, we're always glad to have you as a co-host. That's normally the seat that you sit in, but tonight you're our guest. We are ready. Start talking, buddy. Tell us about Manzo and you.
That could be another book, Manzo and Me. I don't know. What do y'all think?
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
S-A-W-T. Soft. All right. Enzo.
Enzo. Soft.
So, for those that I know you guys have heard it before, but we'll start and we'll go through the whole story. And that's where the new evidence really comes in, is at the very end of the story. And I won't do a spoiler, but it's actually the end became a new beginning. You know, no pun intended there, but it was a synchronicity. I mean, it just, I was contacted by someone out of the blue, but we'll talk about that toward the end of the story. But how I first heard about Manzo Shepherd was from a friend of mine named Harry Gibson. And in my day job, I worked for Harlan County. And my office used to be outside of the old circuit courtroom. And Harry had stopped by. He had some business to take care of. So at the end of the visit, he knew that I really was into Harlan County history. So Harry told me the story. We walk out into the courtroom. Harry says, "Did you know there have been several people killed in here?" And I said, "Well, I'd heard that." He said, "Let me tell you one of the most interesting stories." And he tells me a story about Manzo Shepherd being shot in the circuit courtroom in 1942. Now, over the years, the story had gotten twisted and turned, and the only thing that Harry had right was Manzo's name and three things right: Manzo's name, where he was killed at, and where the murder had taken place. The original legend had it that they murdered Manzo on top of a Black Mountain in Harlan County, Kentucky, which is the highest peak in Kentucky. And then after they murdered Manzo, Manzo murdered the taxi cab driver, he and his cohorts, Howard Hensley and Sherman Klaus, they were allegedly about decapitated him and turned his head around. He was looking out the back window and placed his hands on the steering wheel. Now, you know, it sounded, you know, like an urban legend to me, and as I dug into it, that part of it was an urban legend, because they were on the highest point in the state of Kentucky. They'd have had to walk 10 or 15 miles to the nearest town, so they're not going to give up their getaway car just to play, a joke on whomever may have found the body. How that it really happened was that Manzo, Howard Hensley, and Sherman Klaus got up one morning in late April of 1942, and they decided they were going to rob somebody. And this is backed up by the testimony from the court documents. So, unfortunately, Joe Christian was that somebody. Joe was a taxi cab driver. He actually lived a little ways, several miles outside of Harlan, but Harlan was his primary place of business that he ferried people to and from. So they engaged Joe Christian to take them to a little town in called Appalachia, Virginia, which is probably 40, 50 miles from Harlan. And it wasn't unusual in those days for people to go back and forth to the neighboring towns in Virginia, because they were also coal towns, which Harlan was, in the surrounding area. So Joe Christian proceeds to take them to Appalachia, Virginia. They're climbing the mountain. It's super curvy. And when they get close to there's not very many wide spots. Now, by that, I mean wide shoulders, and the road's kind of narrow anyways. So when one of the last wide spots before they go over into Virginia, they fake the fight. Now, whenever they fake the fight, Joe Christian pulled over to stop him from tearing up the taxi. So whenever he got out of the vehicle, Manzo Shepherd and the other two fellas got out and demanded his money. Manzo wanted to be, from what I can tell, the Harlan County Clyde Barrow. Because what makes me think this is he come from a very poor family, a really rough family, and he was influenced, in my opinion, by the radio and the newspapers of the day that glorified the criminals, Bonnie and Clyde, John Dillinger, Pretty Boy Floyd, and all those folks. Manzo had been in trouble. He was only 24 at the time of the murder, and he and Sherman Klaus had already been in trouble and pulled a couple of years in LaGrange Penitentiary for car theft. So they were no strangers to being on the opposite side of the law. So whenever that, with this being said, you know, Manzo was, from all accounts, was a very cocky young man. And so when they got out, you know, Joe Christian was, I think, 48 years old. He had lived through the Depression. He had seen the first car of coal come out of Harlan County. He had been raised up rough, was more than likely a World War One vet also. So here's these three young guys, the oldest being 26, which was Howard Hensley, which we get into some really interesting details about Howard later on in the story. So they demand the money from Joe Christian. And Joe's looking at these three young men, and he's going, you know, I'm not going to give up my money to these little punks. And he hits Manzo in the face, clocks him, knocks him down. So the other two, Howard Hensley and Sherman Clowns, they start trying to subdue Joe Christian. They say, you know, and it's kind of fuzzy here because they're all pointing, and during the trial, they're all pointing the finger at one another. But either Hensley or Klaus cut Joe Christian first. And then they beat him. They give him a beat down. And Manzo, he's up, and he's furious because he was Manzo Shepherd, and there was nobody going to humiliate him in front of his crew, so to speak. So Manzo pulls out a straight razor. He walks behind Joe Christian. He pulls his hair back while Hensley and Klaus are holding his arms. And he proceeds to cut Joe Christian's throat from ear to ear, almost decapitating. You had the arterial spray. These guys are covered in blood. It looks like they'd slaughtered a hog or a beef. And they turned the man's pockets inside out. The money from further testimony during the court case, the money even got all bloody. Now, they took him. The murder happened in Kentucky, so they thought that if they got him across state lines, because back in those days, if you got across state lines, there was a good chance that nobody really cared, they wouldn't extradite you unless you were silly and got caught again. So they dumped the body in Virginia, thinking that it would be found in Virginia, would be Virginia's jurisdiction. But that was wrong. They played they bet on the wrong horse, so to speak. Now, they threw the body over the hill. It rolled maybe 50 yards. 30 to 50 yards down the mountain, and wasn't discovered until 10 days later. Whenever they discovered the body, they were identified as the last people that had seen Joe Christian alive. So they bring him in for questioning, and there wasn't enough evidence to hold them. So as soon as they were released, they walked about a block and stole a car. Now, you know, if you just committed a murder or we committed some sort of terrible crime and we stole a car, the last thing we're probably going to do is go on a joyride. We probably would try to get as far away from that place as we could. But Manzo and company weren't the brightest crayons in the box. They wanted to be like Clyde Barrow and the rest of them, but they weren't hardly that smart. So what do they do when they steal the car? They go pick up their girlfriends. Then they go buy liquor. Then they go back to Virginia, where they're having a big time going on the road trip. They're drinking and carousing with the ladies, and they're speeding. They get pulled over, and the whenever they run the tags, actually what caused them to be taken in was speeding, and they found one of the murder weapons, which they didn't know it was a murder weapon at the time, under the front seat. So they took them in. I think one of them didn't, maybe it was Klaus that was driving. He didn't have a driver's license. They took them in, called back to Harvey and said, hey, we got some people up here. You know, what's the story on them? So it turns out the vehicle obviously is stolen. And they said, hey, we found a knife. We're doing this. And they said, hey, you know, we'll be there to get them. So they're extradited back to Harlan County. Now, this let's back up just a little bit. Whenever that after they killed Joe Christian, as I said, they're not the smartest guys, not smartest criminals out there. They needed really, if they had done crook news back in the 40s, they would have been, you know, at the top of the list. So after they killed Joe Christian, they go to a saloon. And that's kind of a code for a saloon slash roadhouse, which is a place for liquor and prostitution. And they spend all of Joe Christian's money. Then they take the car and go back to Manziel Shepherd's house. Manziel Shepherd's mother gives them, helps them burn the car. You know, that's motherly love. And they,
of course. Didn't she also give them a fresh change of clothes and everything?
Fresh change of clothes and burn the clothes, as well as help them burn the car. Now, what's surprising about this is the amount of money that they got. Joe Christian only had $26.50 is what the three guys got for the murder. $26.50. We'll say that that was worth, you know, 10 times, money was worth 10 times or 20 times, you know, back then than it's worth now. So they killed a man for probably what today's money will be around $500. So they brutally murder a man for $26.50, and they split the money up with Manzo Shepherd and Sherman Klaus getting $5.75 apiece, and Howard Hensley getting $50. Now, why did, you know, you have to ask the question, why did Hensley get almost triple the money? Was it hush money? Was it that they were maybe more afraid of Hensley than maybe Hensley was a little more of a criminal than what we thought? But anyways, he ended up getting almost triple the money in the split. Now, that was very unusual, especially with Klaus and Shepherd basically plotting the crime, and Hensley kind of was an afterthought. They had actually went and got Hensley and picked him up and taken him with them to the murder site. So let's go back to where they're brought back to Harlan County. So brought back to Harlan County, and we go through this, and, you know, they're captured again in Virginia. And the first trial ends in a mistrial. And the second trial, and is immediately after the first trial ends in a mistrial, the person that hung the jury was a preacher. Well, the sheriff got a warrant for the preacher and put him in jail for obstruction of justice. And so the second trial was a couple of days later. And let's talk about, in between the trials, Manzo Shepherd's mother was also arrested for her part in burning the car. And during her testimony, they asked her, you know, why did you burn the car? Why did you help them burn the car? And she says, well, I want to hide my son's fingerprints. But more than likely, it was to destroy the blood-soaked clothes, or I'm sorry, the blood-soaked interior of the car. Because you got to figure that they were covered in Joe Christian's blood. And also, they had to load Joe Christian into the vehicle in order to take his body across state lines to throw him away. So that car probably was pretty bloody. And that's my theory on why they burned the car, because they left the license plate on it. It wasn't like that they, you know, whenever they destroyed that they. When they burned the car, that you couldn't identify it. I think it was more for what was inside the car. You know, because you know, in case they got, which they did call, but in case that, you know, their thinking probably was that they got caught, and people seen the interior of the car, they would, you know, really get a picture of how brutal the crime was. So. 2 days later, they stood. The second trial went on, and during the second trial, you had it was filled. Well, the first trial was two, but the second trial was filled to capacity. There was 300 people in the courtroom, standing room only. People were being the men were being patted down before they were allowed into the courtroom, which now. And this is the which back in those days, that obviously they didn't have the metal detectors or anything like that, and they weren't searching the females. One of Joe Christian's relations, female relations, slipped a pistol to his nephew, and during the during this trial. You know, the nephew has a gun, but it slipped to him by the female. And so Manzo had been, like I said, he was very arrogant. He was very arrogant. And so during this trial, broke down. Mrs. Heaton was Joe Christian's sister. She broke down. She thought that Manzo was going to be acquitted, because of the hung jury. The case was going to be thrown out again. And she breaks down and she starts crying in the courtroom, wailing. Manzo turns around and looks at her. And laughs. And as he turns around, Jack Heaton, which is Joe Christian's nephew, takes a couple of steps forward and shoots Manzo Shepherd in the back of the head. The bullet goes through his skull, traverses through, and just makes a knot in the very front of his skull. Doesn't come out. He slumps into the partition. People go crazy trying to get out. The jury's, you know, they're sitting, they're all ducking and getting down in case there's any more shooting, but a lot of the spectators are rushing the doors. Well, they restore order, and the judge orders them to take Manzo Shepherd to a hospital that's a couple of blocks away. He also orders the jury to render a verdict because they say Manzo's still alive. Now, Manzo Shepherd had just gotten shot in the back of the skull. and the chances of him being alive was, like, you know, very, very slim. I think what the judge wanted to do was give the family closure with this. I mean, I know they've seen Manzo get killed, but he wanted to render a verdict. And
okay.
So the jury deliberates about 10 minutes. They come back, and Judge Forster says, "Have you reached the verdict?" And the jury foreman says, "Yes, we have, Your Honor." Or, I'm sorry, it's female. No, it was a male foreman in this trial. And, "Yes, we have, Your Honor. And what is the verdict?" And they go, "We find the defendant guilty, and we recommend death by electrocution." And the judge accepts it, and he writes it all out, and then he has them call the hospital. And they say, "Your Honor, Manzo Shepherd's not been dead 2 minutes. He's not been dead just a little bit. We were about to call." So this way they were able to render a verdict on a dead man. And keep in mind that Manzo Shepherd was sitting in a specific chair, the defendant's chair. This chair comes into play later on in the story. So they, obviously they arrest Jack Heaton. They take him upstairs. And the other two defendants don't go on trial that day, which would be Sherman Klaus and Howard Hensley. Now, the guy that just killed Manzo is in the same jail with the other two guys that killed his uncle. And so they, I think that very soon afterward, they were able to post bond for Mr. Heat. Now, fast forward about 6 months or so, about 6 months. And sitting in that same chair is Howard Hensley. Howard Hensley, to avoid the death sentence, he pleads guilty, and he's sentenced to life in prison in the Grange. Sherman Klaus sits in that same chair that Manzo Shepherd was murdered in. He's sentenced to life in prison in the Grange. Now, 3 months later, Jack Heaton is tried for the murder of Manzo Shepherd. And again, it's like standing room only. So they say, "Mr. Heaton, what happened?" And he says, "Look, it was really stressful. My mother's breaking down." Shepherd turns and looks at her and he laughs. "That's the last thing I remember. I killed him. I did it." And they go, "That's it?" He goes, "No, I went crazy. I killed him. I did it." And they go, well, okay. And so they go through all the prosecution and defense, go through all of their, arguments, which there's not very much of an argument because he's admitting that he killed Manzo Shepherd. So the jury deliberates for about 10 minutes. They come back out, and there was a female jury foreman. And the judge says, "Madam Foreman, have you reached a verdict?" She says, "Yes, we have, Your Honor." And he says, "What's the verdict?" And she looks at the judge, and she says, "Not guilty by reason of insanity." The judge looks at Mr. Heaton, slaps the gavel, and says, "Case dismissed, you're free to go." And the courtroom breaks out. Most of the courtroom breaks out in cheers. I don't think that the Shepherd faction was too happy about the verdict. But guess what chair that Jack Heaton was sitting in whenever he got acquitted for the murder of Manzo Shepherd?
Obviously, he was sitting in the same chair. Right.
That Manzo Shepherd was sitting in when he shot him. So that chair became known in the papers as the death chair. Now, Jack Keaton dies of natural causes in Los Angeles, California in 1982. Now, up to this point, does anybody have any observations or questions or anything before we get into the new evidence?
Papa Stroh, you cool with it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, now.
Velvet, are you cool with it? You got
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah,
All right, and I am too. All right, Tony. Now comes the new news.
Now comes the news. I get an email about a week and a half ago, from someone that was in the courtroom, and they have requested to remain anonymous. I've not gotten to interview them yet. I've spoken with their children, or their daughter. So we won't mention their names. They were 7 years old. They were sitting two rows back from where Manzo Shepherd was shot. They saw the whole thing. And as far as we can tell, you know, we have the facts really close. And the statistical probability of an eyewitness and hearing about, and I think they maybe even have read the book, about a murder that took place in 1942 is astronomical. It was unbelievable. Now, at that point, the daughter wanted to talk, and actually, I thought I was going to be speaking with the eyewitness. They had started having some really horrible dreams in the days leading up to the interview. They were reliving it. Now, you got to remember this. This guy was only 7 years old and sitting within 15, 20 feet of a guy that gets his brains blown out. So, you know, that has to be traumatic, and it stayed with him all those years. He has revisited the Harlan County Courthouse and Circuit Courtroom where the murder took place about 13 years ago, and we talked a little bit about that. Now, that's a lot right there whenever when an eyewitness comes forward. Now, during the discussion with the daughter, we start talking about Howard Hensley. And they know a lot about his history and a lot about his, you know, his relatives and things like that. And I said, well, my grandmother's a Hensley. But there's several sets. It's like Hensley is like Jones here, you know, somewhere else. So there's several sets out there. So we start talking about it, and I knew some of the folks. I said that she was talking about, and then she says, calls out this guy's name. She says, well, are you related to, the fellow's name is William Henry Hensley that we were discussing. And I said, William Henry, I said, that was my grandmother's brother or maybe her father. I said, I've heard her talk a lot about William Henry. So at that point, and I said, well, I said, we may end up being, related, or I may have been related to one of the guys in the trial. So I contact Darla Sager Jackson. You know, Darla owns a funeral home among other businesses, and I said, hey, can you help me find the death certificate of my grandmother? And because I need to see what her mother and father's name was. And she said, sure, you know, it may take me a day or so, but I'll help you find it. Right? So that shouldn't be a problem. So we hang up the phone. I'm thinking, wow, man, this is pretty interesting. About 5 minutes later, the phone rings. And Darla says, I found it. I said, the death certificate? She goes, yes. Yeah. And so I said, well, what's the verdict? No pun intended. She says, there's a 90% chance that you're related to Howard Hensley, one of the murderers. And I said, well, I said, that's odd. I said, I've been researching this for years and years and years, and for this to come out, I said, it's just unbelievable. I said, but let's nail it down before we start, you know, saying that we're related to this gentleman. So she gives me, she gives me some Ancestry.com information. I go on Ancestry.com, and my grandmother's name is Elva, E-L-V-A. And so I start searching, I'm looking, I'm finding bits and pieces, but nothing just, you know, concrete, but it's looking that way. Well, I said, well, I'll search the census, because that's going to give the head of the household and the wife and the children. So I find my grandmother in a 1930s census. Well, there's William Henry's, who is her father, then her mother. And I start going down the list of siblings, and about the third or fourth one down, guess who I see? Howard Hensley. Howard Hensley is my grandmother's brother. My grandmother probably was in that very courtroom when that happened, because there's photographs of my grandmother holding her brother's son. Now, my grandmother nor my grandfather never mentioned the murder ever, and I was around them all the time. Never mentioned it, never said a word, never spoke of it, nothing. But I'm assuming they were ashamed of it. Now, so it turns out that all these years I've been researching the Manzo Shepherd story, I've been also researching my great uncle. And that, if that's not synchronicity, them emailing me and then finding out I'm researching my great uncle, I don't know what is. Now, that was like one of the most unbelievable moments that I've ever experienced during
wake up, John.
You know, doing research.
Well, I'm awake. I'm listening. This is one of the most fascinating stories I've ever heard.
So that is the rest of the story that through all these years I've been researching as part of the murder of my great uncle. So what are the chances of that?
Well, in Harlan County, I guess 10%, I guess in the world about zero. That's Tony, that's an amazing story. So to recap, your great uncle was one of the men accused and sentenced for murdering Joe Christian, the cab driver, right?
That's correct. And it looks like, as I'm digging more into it, that he was paroled years later. And as I get it, you know, get the information, I'll share it. But it looks like he was paroled years later and moved out of Harlan County now. And I won't mention, I won't even mention the state that these folks live in, but Manzo Shepherd's niece that had helped me with giving me some information. And these folks live within, they live in the same state about 2 hours from each other. So,
is it a state that's close
yes.
to Kentucky? Okay.
Yes. Yes, it borders Kentucky. And apparently both sets of family after that murder where it was so sensationalized and publicized moved in those days it would have taken you 10, 12, 14 hours to get to where they're at. They moved, out of Harlan County to start a new life. And then they ended up within 2 hours of each other.
That's crazy.
Wow. That's amazing. So Tony, if you don't mind me asking, approximately when mm-hmm. were you born? And did you ever know these people?
I was born in November 1962. I never knew any of the I'm sure whenever I was small I had met some of my grandmother's brothers and things, but to my knowledge I never met Howard. It's a possibility that I might have met him well, but I would have been so small. But I don't think so. I think that he moved away. My grandmother never spoke of it. My grandfather never spoke of it. But now, you know, I knew some of her other sisters and brothers, you know. But and it's very possible. Very possible. But it's possible that I had met the man, I would have been, 4 or 5 years old. So, but... So I think he lived up until between 95 and 2000 when he died, 93 to 2000. How would he say lived?
Yeah. I mean, I know that when I was a little tiny kid, I met Uncle Sherman and Aunt Bessie and this whole crowd of people that were just absolutely ancient. They were in their 80s when I met them, and it was I barely remember them. But none of them were involved in a murder, and that's kind of amazing that you actually are related to one of the men that you were investigating.
And never had a clue.
Never had a clue.
So, but it's hopefully I get the interview with the eyewitness, and he can shed some more light on this. But
the young man who was 7 years old who was in the courtroom, right?
Yes, he's 86 today.
Ooh.
He's 86.
Right. So Rob and Velvet, I have a question for you. Can you remember, you don't need to tell us the exact year, but think back of when you were 7 years old, and can you tell us about any event that happened when you were 7 years old? I'm going to go to Velvet first and then Rob next. Velvet, can you think of an event that happened when you were 7 years old? How good is your memory of it?
Really good. I remember my dad opening his first grocery store on Edisto Island in 70-something. I won't say the year. but, yeah, I was 7 years old, and we had just moved back to Edisto. And he opened that store, and it was a family business. You know, everybody worked, including me.
right.
But it was a good time. We met a lot of great people, all the farmers out there. We knew them all. We knew, my fondest memory is the milkman coming twice a week. and delivering milk, and he'd always give me chocolate milk when he came by.
And well, that was great. I mean,
yeah.
So sleeping
on the rice, 50-pound bag of rice. Go ahead.
So here's my main question is, how clear are your memories when you were 7 years old?
Oh, that's what, well, I mean, that would be it, because I don't remember everybody's names. I can remember faces. I can remember bits and pieces of that, of stuff like that. You know, when we moved, when we got there, where we lived, how the store was. But, yeah, I see what you're getting at. I mean, you're not going to remember everything, but see, that's a different thing. He saw something traumatic that I guarantee you scarred him for his entire life. You don't forget somebody at 7 years old getting shot in the back of the head. You just don't.
And you fit in 26 promo.
You know, you just can't. There's no way you can erase that.
Right.
You know,
Papa
I don't
Stroh,
care who you are.
Papa Stroh, I'm going to go to you, and I'm going to say, when you were 7 years, give us a memory when you were 7 years old, and tell us how clear that memory is. That, and I think this is an important point to bring out, sir.
Oh, wow. Well, I can remember not eating onions because my girlfriend at the time didn't like onions, even though I did like onions. And after we lost touch, then I went back to eating onions. But there for a while, I wouldn't eat onions because he didn't like onions. And I remember my uncle cheating to beat me every time we'd play Monopoly together at a seafood restaurant that he owned. Every time I'd go see him, we'd play Monopoly, and he would cheat like hell. And next thing you know, damn, he wins again, and I go back to jail. Don't pass go, don't collect $200, that type of thing. But I would try and try, I remember that vividly, very clear, because I was pretty upset as a kid. So my uncle, man, he kept cheating all the time. I couldn't win for losing.
Right, but what I'm saying is, because of some emotional drama there that really, really engaged you, you have very clear memories. So this gentleman,
I was pretty upset I couldn't win a game of Monopoly against my uncle because, man, he knew all the tricks of the trade. And I would, oh,
right.
God. And I always end up with this stupid-looking horseshoe. You know, they had these little gimmicks of the Monopoly with the horse and the car.
They were gimmicks for sure. But, yeah, Tony, it goes to show you that with some severe emotional trauma like this person went through, there should be some pretty decent memories of what happened. Don't you agree?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The daughter, and you know, I'm not trying to be vague, but I promised him I wouldn't mention their name,
right,
especially his name. But he remembers it vividly like it was yesterday. He can tell you everything.
I can see that.
Everything about, from the gunshot on, because he was focused there. I mean, because we'll not say too often much, but he could have been related to one of the folks there. We'll leave it at that. And so his focus is there. It's not like a 7 year old that mom and dad brought him in. He's squirming. He's looking around, looking up in the air. He's riveted to this scene. And then during this courtroom scene, all of a sudden, the gunshot and Manzo falling into the wall, or not the wall, but the divider from the courtroom and the spectators, which is only just a little thing about waist high, with pickets in it. So he could see very clearly what was going on.
Right.
Yeah.
So, So we're expecting an interesting report from you. You said within the next couple of weeks you intend to interview this person, right?
I hope to interview them. I've not heard back, but I'm actually going to send him a book, and I hope that he lets me interview him, because it would help shed so much light on the events of that day, and also, you know, and he could probably tell me whether my grandmother and grandfather were in the audience, which I will bet you that they were. I will bet you because that was her brother. So you know she was there. And see, the thing, she was 6 months pregnant with my father at the time. Yeah. Yeah, so there's a lot of a really cool backstory that just that one email and that one conversation. It was multiple conversations in the same night that brought to light.
Well, you've got a real story there, Tony, and it's so interesting that your great uncle was one of the murderers, and I'm sure there's a lot more that's going to come to light, and you are going to keep us. I'm going to ask you in advance that in 3 months' time, will you come back on as a guest, not as a co-host, but as a guest and fill
sure.
us in?
Sure.
Absolutely.
Sure,
we got to have you in March, because, I mean, this is going to be – this is kind of a big deal. It really is. And I hope some of us, at part of the ScaryCast crew, can get up there before then. We can take some pictures. We can do the ghost tour of the courthouse, and I mean, I just think it's great. I mean, we're on with you, the cutting edge of historical and paranormal research. Correct?
Yes, I'd love to have you guys down and give you the tour, because the courtroom and the jail are in the same building, and so I can take you from where, you know, so remodeled it, but I can show you some more photographs to point out exactly within 5-10 feet where Manzo was sitting when he was killed, and then take you up. I don't know the exact cell, but I can take you up and show you the cell block where Manzo and Hal Hensley, Sherman Klaus, and Jack Heaton were in.
So we can start calling him.
Uh-oh.
Did I get that right?
Yeah.
You faded out, John.
I'm sorry. Did we get it right that we can now call him Howard Hensley, your great uncle?
Yes, that's correct.
Because
that's
I'll
correct.
Tell you what.
I mean,
sitting here on this broadcast, you talk about great uncles. One of the most famous great uncles in the entire sports world is sitting with Papa Stroh, and that is Gorgeous George. And so, you know, we all have some famous and infamous family members, and I think it's going to be spectacular because I want to get up there and I want to bring whoever wants to come with me. I'd like to bring everybody, and I want to see where all this happened and take some pictures, because I think it's important. This is, I can, Psychic John says there's more to come. I can tell you that there has got to be more to come to this event, and so we'll see what happens. So I guess, Tony, is that the report for Monday evening? Is that the full report that you have for us?
That's the report. That's what the author of Cronkite put it. That's the way it is. November 23rd, 2020, 9:54 p.m.
All right. Well, we're getting close.
I like
so
that.
We will get up there before your March contact with us on ScaryCast. It's going to be great. And thank you for telling us all everything that's going on.
Hey,
so what I'll do now is yes, sir.
And I tell you, John, we can, depending on this COVID thing, we probably can broadcast a episode from the courtroom.
Oh, that'd be awesome. I'm in.
Maybe a special episode. We could do a special episode on a weekend, absolutely.
Hey, can I be like Grandpa Munster that was in used cars when he was playing the judge? He had the guillotine on the podium there. That'd be great.
So Tony, can you get Papa Stro up there on the on the podium on the judge thing and let him be the judge?
Oh yeah, there's plenty of room. I am in for that.
Owen needs Joe Pesci, and I can like say, "Hey, Joe, what's a youth?
I have a feeling though, if you do that, you're going to stir up some stuff in that courtroom.
Well, it has activity because what we're covering now is just the historical part. There's a part B, the paranormal part, that Manzo Shepherd. We've got several EVPs from Manzo Shepherd and some other folks. There's probably been 20, 25 deaths that we know about. In the courthouse.
I'm in.
We're going to do great, and we'll invite our buddy Shane Hollis. He's from Somerset, Kentucky. He's the guy that always gets the EVPs. We'll have Shane there. We'll have Robin there. I mean, this is going to be a free-for-all for ScaryCast. It's going to be more fun than you can have anywhere else. But then when we're done, we're going to go to the first Kentucky Fried Chicken over there. What's the name of that town?
It's about
Corbin, Kentucky. That is the first Kentucky Fried Chicken, and I went in there and they had it set up the way it was back when it started, and it's incredible. So we'll have a heck of an afternoon or whatever.
We got the old Redenbacher popping corner.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, that'll be a ScaryCast event. That'll be an event to record and remember. So, Tony, all I got to say is thank you for this great report that your great uncle was, it's terrible to say, thanks for telling us your great uncle was a murderer. But that's really, that's really interesting. It's interesting.
No problem.
But the interesting part is where I researched it all those years, and then it's like, I've written about this guy and all that, and it's like, at the end of the day, it's like, oh, hey, Tony, it's your great uncle, man.
It's
kind of wild.
By the way, your great uncle.
Yeah, I'm dying.
He was a hate.
Oh, Lord.
I'll tell you what my girlfriend said. I'll go in and I'll tell Jenny, I go, gee, all this stuff and this email and all this, and my great uncle was one, he was with Manzo, and that's my great uncle. And she looks at me, serious as you know what. She says, that explains a lot.
Right?
Play banjo on D flat.
Right?
D flat banjo.
That's right.
Well, Tony, we're gonna make it, we're gonna set up a trip for January or February, and this is gonna be the most fun, and we're gonna enjoy being up there with you. I haven't seen you since the 2019 Tennessee Bigfoot Conference because we had COVID this year. Everything's been closed. We have over 800. It's been dead. It has been. We've got over 800 people waiting for a Tennessee Bigfoot Conference, and I think over 700 looking for a Georgia Bigfoot Conference. So, we can't wait to get all this COVID out of the way, and we can come back. And, Tony, I'm going to go ahead and project that we will have a 2021 Tennessee Bigfoot Conference, and I want to ask you to be one of the keynote speakers right now to tell the entire story of Manzo. You think you can do it?
Well, absolutely. And before we close, I know we're short of time. The two families that I'm talking about, I just want to let everybody know that they are some of the nicest people that you'd ever want to meet or ever want to talk to. They regret what happened. They're super nice people. And I don't want anybody that listens to this to think that they are in anything other than a class act. But both sets of the family, we all have the relations, the black sheeps or the whatever you want to call them, that does things that we're ashamed of. And I think that's what happened with Manzo and Howard Hensley and Klaus. But everyone that I've talked to from these families are such nice people. So I just want to throw that out there. You know, it's not like that they're hiding in the shadows. I mean, they're or anything like that. They are just really fine, upstanding folks.
Well, thanks for that. That's very important to say, because you know you're not responsible for what other people do, especially if they're part of your family. But things do happen. So Tony Pelosi, again, thank you so much for being a special part of ScaryCast tonight by presenting the story. Now in 2 weeks, as I said, we're gonna have John LeMay from Roswell, and he's gonna talk about Tall Tales and Half Truths of Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid. I've got the books. I'm reading them. They're absolutely incredible. These books he wrote, and I'm so glad that we're lucky enough to have, our boy John LeMay with us. But he wrote for the History Press, and this is a big deal. So we're so glad to have him every month to talk about Roswell and talk about his book. So that's what's going on in 2 weeks. Now, next week, don't know, we're working on the program right now. And I want to say thank you to Papa Stroh for being with us. And we're going to do, as I learned on WCW Retro, the man taught us that we do our plugs. So, Papa Stroh, what is your plug for the upcoming week?
Well, I'll be the Indie Room podcast tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll have a special guest and callers come on over. Then Thursday night, be hosting WCW Retro on a special Thanksgiving edition show this Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then this Friday night will be another edition of my horror sci-fi show, The Stroh Zone, at midnight Eastern Standard Time. And this Friday night's feature will be Earth versus the Spider. So please tune in.
Nice. Yes.
Awesome. Well, that's cool. Great. Well, thanks. And I know for one thing I will be one of your guests on the WCW Retro. That's always a lot of fun. And thanks a lot for being with us. We really appreciate it. Amazing Velvet down in Charleston.
I'll bring
what
you cranberry
sauce. Okay, will do. Okay. All right, Amazing Velvet,
well,
what have you got going on?
We have every Sunday from now on, every Sunday night at 10 p.m., we have our new podcast, Pro Wrestling Interviews. And this week coming, we will have none other than the Suntan Superman himself, Dion Johnson. He's a member of the Soul Patrol.
Yes.
Well, that'll be great.
That's awesome.
And I certainly hope. I talked to Papa Stroh, and he said he would love to maybe start joining us on that. So, Papa Stroh, we would love to have you there if you can make it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. Always welcome.
I wouldn't pass this up chat to fly with the Suntan Superman. It'd be awesome.
Exactly. Our first show this past Sunday was Mean Mark Ash, and we're going to do a part two with him somewhere down the road. But, yeah, it was awesome.
It was a lot of fun. We had a lot of listeners. We'll know tomorrow how many we had. That's when I can check the stats. So I'll certainly put up a note on the website or on the Facebook page.
Okey-dokey.
And Tony Pelosi, what have you got going on? Because you always have a lot of interesting things going on up there in the murder capital of the universe, Harlan, Kentucky.
Right now I'm doing a whole lot of interviews for Dollars of Mine's next book. There's going to be some great stories in it. This isn't just a rehash of the old urban legends, or some of those we found out a little bit more about, can shed a little bit more light on. But let's just say that there's going to be some really good stuff, and I don't want to ruin it, but can we say Kentucky Mothman? Anyone?
Oh, wonderful.
So, and
we love the Mothman.
Many other things.
I mean, Kentucky's a big state, and it's got some really crazy things that have happened in it. So we were finding out more about Kentucky with you. Fair enough?
Yes.
Well, good. And let's see, on Monday, on Monday, the 30th of November, the brand new book comes out. It'll be available on Amazon, and it's called The Lizard Man Companion. I will be doing an interview on Monday night at some point. We'll also have Scarycast, but I'll be doing an interview on Radio Disclosure with Mark Aaron. He interviewed me a couple of weeks ago about UFOs, Aliens, UFOs, and Anomalies, my current book on Amazon. So we'll have the brand new one, and it's going to be a blast. We've got a lot of stuff coming out about the Lizard Man. We're doing some filming of some B-roll this weekend that will be available for everyone to see starting Monday. So we've got a lot of great things going on with the Scarycast crew. Thanks to everybody for being here. We couldn't do it without our great guests and our great co-hosts and our great guests. So thanks to everybody, and we will see you next week, November the 30th. Don't know who the program is yet, but we're working on a great one. So, and hopefully Devin and Robin will be off of they'll be off of Hall Pass, and they'll be back with us, and we'll have a great time. So thanks to everybody from Central Broadcasting Spot here in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. We'll talk to you next week on Scarycast.
All right.
Have a great one, everybody. Bye.
Have a great one, everybody.
Yes, right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.